Hello and welcome to this week's Inside Education, your weekly guide to education matters in Ireland and further afield with me, Sean Delaney. You can get in touch with me through Twitter at Inside Ed, by email insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie or through the programme's website insideed.com. If you're an educator with a story to tell or an event to highlight, please contact me and I'll do my best to feature it on a future programme. Later on today's programme, in advance of the annual conference of the Irish Primary PE Association, I'll be bringing you an interview with Susan Maron, who chairs the organisation and is also a lecturer in education in the Physical Education Unit in St Patrick's College. But first, I bring you the second part of my interview and assessment with one of Susan's colleagues in St Patrick's College, Dr Michael O'Leary. On last week's programme, Michael O'Leary discussed types of assessment and aspects of the validity and reliability of assessments. In this part of our conversation, I began by asking Michael to explain for us a term that is commonly associated with standardised testing, namely a STEN score.
The word STEN comes from the term Standard 10. In essence, what it is a child's performance level or children's performance levels on a test are banded off into 10 categories. And the categories are: a STEN of 1, 2 or 3 is considered to be significantly below average performance on a test. A STEN of 4, 5, 6 and 7 is considered to be average performance on a test. And then a STEN of 8, 9 and 10, those three are considered to be significantly above average performance on a test. But it's possible that a child could have a STEN of 6. Let's say the child took the same assessment a month apart. In the first assessment, the child's performance on the test was considered to be a 6, a STEN of 6. That would be considered average performance. In the next assessment, the child gets a STEN of 7. That's considered to be average performance as well, but a little bit better. So the child certainly did better the second time the child took the test, but it's also possible that there may be absolutely no difference in the two performances if you take the margin of error into account, if you take the fact that there is error associated with this. However, if you get a division of maybe 2 STEN scores, that would suggest that there is a difference. But even with 2 STEN scores, it's possible that the scores may not be significantly different. They are different, but whether they're importantly different or not, if there is a gap of 2, a STEN score of 5 to 7, or a STEN score from 7 to 8, then, or a 7 to 9, it's possible that that would indicate either an improved performance on the test or a disimprovement on the test.
The other way.
But it is not that simple, Sean. It really isn't that simple.
If we move away a bit from that, Michael, to the more general, very often when the media covers education, it covers it in relation to assessment. How much attention should we pay to international comparative test results?
I think attention needs to be paid to international comparative test results, the same way I think a teacher needs to pay attention to standardised test results within a school. So I think that those international assessments, and I presume here you're talking about the Programme for International Student Assessment, which is PISA for 15-year-olds, or the Trends in International Mathematics, Maths and Science Study, which is TIMSS, and PIRLS, which is Progress in International Reading, all of those assessments I think are valuable. They provide us as a country with system level rather than individual school level or individual student level. It provides us with some system benchmarks. We get a sense in which we can say our 15-year-olds can do things that other 15-year-olds in OECD countries or other countries in the world that we're interested in can do. We, for example, might say, gosh, there are students in Finland who seem to be reading at a level that seem to exceed our typical fourth class children. I think it gives us a sense of where we stand in terms of international benchmarks. And given that we live in a very globalized world, Sean, where, big international companies and I mean, education systems are globalized in the sense that we bring ideas from all places. People take ideas from us. I often meet delegations here from all kinds of countries coming wanting to know, how do we prepare our teachers? What do we do? People are interested in what other people do. And I think it would be very foolish of us not to be interested. But coming back to the basic idea of a single assessment is a very poor basis for making a decision. I think we should never overreact to one set of results. In my own doctoral dissertation, I looked at an anomaly between results that came out in Ireland in 1991 in an international assessment called the International Assessment of Educational Progress, and where Irish 12, 13-year-olds were shown to perform very, very poorly in science. And 4 years later, in another international study, the TIM study in 1995, the same grouping of children were shown to perform actually quite well. And nothing had really changed in 4 years. And I did a fairly serious study into looking at how come in one study our Irish students performed very poorly and in another study they seemed to perform much better. And the complexity of this study, of these studies, is even more important. The implications are that it is even more important never to base really important decisions about a system based on one international survey. A similar thing happened, I suppose, in PISA in 2009. There was a lot of concern about how poorly our Irish 15-year-olds had performed in PISA, especially in things like reading and maths. But 3 years later, the not the exact same students, but a different cohort of students, and in 2012, and in PISA 2012, the students were shown to have performed much better. And I think that there was a lot of media attention, and a lot of not just media attention, but a lot of policy attention put on a single set of results in 2009. And it was kind of interesting that this had happened before, and that was shown, my original study between 1991 and 1995, it was shown actually that when you took account of factors such as the way the studies were conducted and the children who took part in the study, that there was actually no difference between the two studies. In 2009-2012 PISA, I mean, we do know for a fact now that for whatever reason, the students in 2009 were not terribly engaged with the test. They skipped a lot of questions, for example. And there were also elements of the PISA 2009 study, some technical elements that needed to be addressed in terms of measuring change. So that we're not quite sure whether there was the level of validity of the study in 2009. But we do know that there was a reliability problem, because in 2012, we didn't, you know, it just didn't replicate again. And I think that the Pearls and Tim studies as well sort of suggested that Irish students were not quite at the low level that people were saying they were in 2009. So I think I am a very strong supporter of international studies. I'm a very strong supporter of the opportunities to engage internationally, not just with the test, but with the people who are involved in assessment, policy making. I think we have a lot to learn from countries, a lot to learn from how schools are organised, how teacher education is organised. I think there's a whole range of things that we learn from international studies. But my great concern is that we place too much attention on a single set of results.
And in the 91 to 95 result, did you find out why we had performed poorly in 91 and much better in 95?
Yes, I mean, essentially it was a whole range of factors, as it was between 2009 and 2012. In 1991 and 1995, I mean, there were a number of key factors. For example, in 1991, the sampling was by age. So children were chosen according to the year of birth. In 1995, the students that were sampled within a class or a grade. And what had actually happened is that when you sample Irish 13-year-olds, some of them are still in primary school and some of them are in secondary school and some of them are in first year and some of them are in second year. And when I took out the students and put them into the proper grade levels and compared to the TIMSS results in 1995, where the children were sampled by grade, it took a lot of the anomaly away. And one of the things for people to remember is that in 1991 there was no science curriculum in primary school. So the reality is that children were doing science in first year and second year. But in 1991, if you sample 13-year-olds, you have children in there who had not done science. They might have done nature study, but they didn't do science. There was another very interesting element to it as well, in that the actual test that was used in 1991 was 100% multiple choice. Whereas in 1995, the test, I think, was around maybe 60% multiple choice. And there were short answer questions and extended item questions. And one of the really interesting things about the extended item questions, that means where people, students answer a question in a longer format, and this is in science now, so they give a long response to a question, is that if you just took out those questions, I found that the Irish pupils, Irish students in first and second year were actually performing at a level that the students in the best countries in the world were performing. But they didn't perform quite as well in multiple choice, the multiple choice element of it. And I think that there probably was an element of familiarity with the multiple choice format, that children in some countries are very familiar with that format. Irish kids at that time were not as familiar. Now, Sean, there were a number of other things as well, and all of them contributed an element to the to explain. But I suppose the bottom line was that if you compare like with like, the finding in 1991 was not as bad as people thought it was. And again, in 2009 in PISA, I just asked the question, I wonder, were we really as bad as we thought we were in 2009, based on what happened in TIMSS and PIRLS and PISA subsequently?
And that was Michael O'Leary wondering if history repeats itself in comparative assessments in education. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Next on the programme, I am joined by Susan Maron. A lecturer in the Physical Education Unit in St Patrick's College, Susan Maron is also the chairperson of the Irish Primary PE Association. The annual conference of the Irish Primary PE Association takes place on Saturday, the 28th of February this year in the Hudson Bay Hotel in Athlone. To mark this event, I met up with Susan to discuss with her some matters related to physical education in the primary school. I started off by asking her to tell me briefly about the Irish Primary PE Association.
It's a voluntary organisation and we receive support from the PDST as well as Dublin West Education Centre. But it's generally voluntary and it's generally made up of primary teachers.
And what kind of things do you do?
So I suppose what the popular things are and what we're people seem to enjoy are the communities of practice. There are two-hour workshops that take place after school in a number of regions around the country where teachers give up their own time, and we run workshops which are generally practical in nature and that activities they can carry out in their physical education lessons. Of late, we've put a lot of work into our website and we have information there for specifically for our members. There's a member section and then there's a non-member section. And on the website, we try to upload current documents or policies that have been launched, initiatives, our workshops from the notes from the communities of practice are there. And the most popular activity that we have is our annual conference.
And that's the reason that we're talking today, because your conference is coming up shortly. Can you tell us a little bit about what's in store for...
Well, up until 2 years ago, we had our conferences, we rotated them in the Colleges of Education. And last year was our first year to go outside the Colleges of Education, which proved very popular up in Carlingford. And our theme up there was outdoor and adventure activities. This year, we've gone to the Midlands and we are going to the Hudson Bay Hotel in Athlone, a beautiful setting. And the theme of this year's workshop is Thinking and Moving Outside the Box. And that's it's on Friday, Saturday, the 28th of February.
And what are the highlights of it, Susan?
Well, we're very aware of schools and maybe the limited facilities they've had, and also the role of the valuable role that the class teacher can make in the physical education program. So we have an event like water play in the swimming pool, and this is our first time to actually have an event in the water. And while we recognise that the primary school teacher should be with qualified swimming instructors, we do believe they can work alongside them with small groups of children. And we will have a box of equipment, small, relatively inexpensive equipment that children can have a lot of fun in to develop water play. Another workshop will be moving with apps, which is one that I'm going to deliver. And we're going to look at one particular app called Video Delay that can be used as an assessment tool to record children moving, where the teacher can observe movement, but also the children can observe movement. But the beauty of this app is that there's no ethical permission needed for the filming, as it's gone after a set period of seconds that you can set the timer for. So another activity that we have is golf for schools, which sounds very extravagant. It is actually going to be in Athlone Golf Club because you can walk to it from the hotel, but it's actually just in a grass area where equipment is adapted. Beautiful work cards that have been created by the Golf Federation that it is, I guarantee, you can use in schools for striking activities.
And is golf on the curriculum?
Golf is a striking skill, and we're very concerned with developing children's fundamental movement skills. Hence, the emphasis is on striking. But obviously, young children, we would strike with hand paddles first, leading on to bats, leading on to larger implements, and eventually maybe modified golfing equipment. But it's all centred around striking skills.
There's another one that's caught my attention, and it's one on yoga.
Yeah.
And again, is yoga on the curriculum?
Yoga, now that's a very interesting one. Kira Delaney has just finished her master's in St. Patrick's College on, is there a place for yoga in the primary school curriculum? And she set off a couple of years ago on a journey where she did her diploma, and it was in physical education at St. Patrick's College. And the research question was, is there a place for yoga in the primary school curriculum? So she held two communities of practice workshops. There was about 25 teachers at each one, and she gave out a questionnaire. And she centred the yoga around gymnastics and dance. And maybe there was possibilities to include some yoga type activities in warm-ups and cool-downs and in some balancing in gymnastics. And it has proved very popular, and she went on and developed it into her master's and just qualified this year in it. So while it's not on the curriculum, we recognise there's aspects of it that can develop flexibility, coordination, balance, and also it's possible to use them as physical activity breaks in schools.
And how important is stretching for young children?
Well, the physical activity guidelines for children recommend that children should be active 60 minutes a day and should have muscular strength and flexibility exercise 2 or 3 times a week. And children are growing, but the main thing is that children do these activities through play and fun. And again, it's an area that we would encourage teachers to use their local playgrounds. That's where children develop their flexibility and their strength in a fun and natural way, rather than performing exercises the way you or me as an adult would go to get our exercise, a set period of time, a set number of repetitions. Children don't enjoy that form, but flexibility is very important, as well as muscular strength, for growing children.
Earlier in the programme, Susan, we heard from Michael O'Leary about assessment in education, and the Irish Primary PE Association has just launched a position paper on a form of PE assessment, that's fitness testing in Irish primary schools. What do you mean by fitness testing?
We're talking about measuring health-related physical fitness elements like physical activity, strength, flexibility, body composition. However, this is a very controversial area, especially for young children, as a form of assessment. And it has been popularised in recent years in Ireland through Operation Transformation. And 2 years ago, we got very concerned because anecdotally, we were hearing of primary school teachers carrying out, for example, a commercial test called the Bleep Test, which is a maximal test where children have to run on a 20-metre shuttle run in time with bleeps, until the bleeps get too quick and children drop out and are eliminated. It's a maximal test which can take your fitness to a limit. And we don't approve of that for a number of reasons. First of all, it raises concerns about the measurement techniques being used. Have the people who are conducting the test adequate training for conducting the assessments? We're very concerned about the privacy protection element of it and the data. what effective parental information has been given, and also what is the professional referral systems in place. So if someone has difficulty in maths, there are resources that can be provided to the children in the school. If someone has been found to have fitness testing measurements, which would be a concern, what referral systems are in place? And there's no formality around it, and we would be very concerned that it can be misused, these tests.
And is it just the fitness testing that you're against, or are you against all assessment in physical education?
No, we are just concerned about the fitness element.
So if a teacher wanted to do assessment then in physical education, what kind of things
we
could
would
they do?
Refer them to that the children would self-assess or even peer assess, but that they would measure themselves against their own measurements, not compete against other children who are of different sizes, who are from different backgrounds, are getting different physical activity experiences at home, depending on their environment that they're living in. Obviously, children who play a lot of sport out of school, they're going to be a lot fitter than a child who's depending on PE 60 minutes a week, is never going to get any child fit. But what the beauty of PE is, it can provide opportunities for physical activity. But a PE teacher is trying to teach the children about physical activity, but they are also trying to teach them movement through a broad and balanced curriculum. They're in PE, expose them to a lot of learning, knowledge and social learning. So we are very concerned that if teachers over-assess the fitness element, that the dangers that I've just listed would take more importance than the assessments that the curriculum and the NCCA are promoting. So we would tell teachers, if they are using assessment, that they would stick to the guidelines from the National Council on Curriculum and Assessment. And that, for example, in athletics, you might decide over a 6-week period, you want the children to be able to run from maybe week one, being able to run for 1 minute without stopping, to 2 minutes, to maybe reaching for maybe fourth year class, maybe you're talking about 6 to 8 minutes, but that there's a range there that children can reach and each individual child can reach, rather than trying to reach a score that all children should be able to reach, which we feel is impossible because children are different sizes, different backgrounds, different experiences.
And you know the way we hear a lot today about obesity, and a lot of people look to PE as a way of solving that. I suppose I'm wondering that sometimes people, maybe parents, may even be in denial about their child's lack of fitness. Could a fitness test, you know, just be an eye-opener or a wake-up call for such parents?
Well, Sean, we feel, I think if you had 30 children in front of you, even by observation, a child who's large doesn't necessarily have to be told they're unfit as well. And some children who are large can be fit as well. That we feel that PE is 60 minutes a week. Children are recommended to be active for 60 minutes a day. And sometimes there's confusion over what is PE and what is physical activity. Physical education is teaching children movement, and they're going to be physically active in the process. But the purpose of physical education is not to make children fit. That's the purpose partly of PE, but also of encouragement from home, the exposure that children are given to physical activity opportunities at home, in the community, walking to school, cycling to school. That's where children accumulate their 60 minutes a day. In PE class, there's an opportunity that day for children to be more active. But in the PE lesson, the teacher is trying to teach a lot more than just physical activity. Anybody can come in and give a ball out and get the children active. But the teacher is trying to teach a number of elements in PE, and one of them is physical activity, but they're also trying to have social outcomes, knowledge outcomes, effective outcomes.
And does the physical education curriculum include any work on nutrition at all?
It refers to health-related fitness. And with that, it wants the children to become familiar with what does physical activity mean? What does it mean to have a balanced diet? But it's not necessarily there as a measurement. It's there to teach children knowledge and to try and teach that knowledge through fun activities. So, for example, if you brought children to the playground for a physical education lesson, maybe they could walk or run down to a local park. You set up maybe stations in the playground where some might be climbing up over climbing frames, others might be working on skipping ropes, and maybe explaining to the children as they're climbing on the monkey bars, they are developing muscular strength. Maybe while they are skipping, they are developing endurance, aerobic fitness. So explaining to the children through activity what they are developing, giving them the knowledge and skills that will lead them to hopefully having the foundation for lifelong physical activity. But by measuring the children in a bleep test, the children know before they even start who's the fittest, who's not the fittest. Do children need to be exposed in front of each other and humiliated? And a large child knowing that they're going to stop and knowing that they're not going to get very far in the bleep test, what is that doing socially and effectively for that child? If anything, turn them off physical activity.
You've brought out the position paper now, Susan. What's going to happen with it next?
Now, it's going to be launched at the PE conference, so it's not up on our website as yet. We would hope that we have already shown it to a number of teachers. We've kept it to a page long, so there won't be too much reading for people to do. And we want to bring the message home, really, where we stand on the statement. But we're only one cog in the machine. I think there's a lot, you know, out in the community, sport, parents, travel to school, all those elements, as well as diet. But teachers can't control what children eat at home. And in 6 weeks, you know, if you're trying to measure physical fitness, how can you control for all the other factors that is going on outside the school grounds? It doesn't really form a part of the primary school programme in the colleges of education, actual physical fitness. We don't, in the limited time we have, because they're generalist teachers, it's a huge area, and definitely teachers would need upskilling and support if they were to carry out these measurements.
And finally, Susan, if someone wants to find out more about the conference, how can they do that?
Well, the places are filling up rapidly. We had our meeting last week and I know there were 75 places booked. So we've 100 places and Eventbrite.
It's
limited. Okay. So on our website.
And that website address is irishprimarype.com.
Yes.
And it sounds as if you need to book a place quickly if you want to attend the 2015 conference of the Irish Primary PE Association on the 28th of February. Well, that was Susan Maron from St Patrick's College bringing this week's Inside Education to a close. Thanks to my guests on the programme this week, Dr Michael O'Leary and Susan Maron, both from St Patrick's College. If you'd like to feature an event or an idea on a future programme, you can write to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can listen to over 200 podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.